now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lane. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here, Crave Wrestling. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, along always with the Ryan Fuqua.
Good evening out there, everyone. Just trying to help you make sense of the Raw 1000 today. We'll do our best.
Absolutely. And we are destined and determined to live up to the hype of Pancakes and Power Slams, unlike the 1000th Raw episode. So we will be talking about that. We welcome your calls, especially this week. The number is 347-884-8452. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. Taking your calls for the 1000th Raw. Right before we do that, just a few notes as far as this week's news. Dolph Ziggler livid at Sin Cara for the botched spot at Money in the Bank. I believe it was Dave Meltzer, very critically acclaimed Dave Meltzer, said that he actually doesn't blame Sin Cara for the spot. He actually, because basically he was bending down, and it was just a miscue, so it wasn't, he didn't believe it was totally Sin Cara's fault. Kurt Angle gets married, and Chavo Guerrero signs with TNA, and he will be debuting this Thursday. Without further ado, let's get into the Raw 1000th episode. First episode was in January of 1993, and 19 and a half years later, we are here, 1,000 episodes of Raw. Michael Cole made an interesting little stat. If you watched every episode back-to-back, I believe he said that it would take 75 hours, if I'm not mistaken. 75 days, I'm sorry. Yeah, 75 days. So, 75 days. I won't do that, but if I'm not mistaken, I have watched every episode of Raw, missing maybe a few, but I doubt it. So without throughout the entire 19 years, I've watched Raw. So my criticism or my critique definitely stems from watching Raw from day one till now, and I must say I'll get into exactly how I feel about it all together, but yeah, it didn't live up to the hype. So if you feel different, if you feel the same, be sure to call in, share your thoughts. 347-884-8452. We'll take calls if applicable. First, we get to a great intro video package. Just WWE does a great job doing that, period, just with the video packages, and they didn't pull the stops as far as showing different people. They even showed Randy Savage, which I was pretty surprised about. But I was glad that they did that, because Randy Savage did have a huge contribution to the Raw in the beginning. He actually was a color commentator for Raw for a while, and I'm glad that they did that. Starts off with Vince coming out, of course. He is the mastermind behind Raw, and he comes out, introduces DX. Triple H and HBK comes out, and then when they were about to do their usual DX spiel and their little moment, they said that there are more members, and out comes Road Dogg, Billy Gunn, and X-Pac, and the Invasion Jeep that they had, the Hummer, I believe it was. And so that was a really good moment. Damian Sandow interferes eventually on the mic and eventually gets super kicked and pedigreed and thrown out. This actually was one of the best segments of the night to me. It was a good start. If they went this pace, it would have been really good, but they didn't really go this pace, but at the same time, it was indeed a good start for Raw.
Oh, yeah, that opening package, I mean, it could have went on for 2 hours, and I wouldn't even have said, hey, are they going to do a show? I would have just been happy watching 2 hours of a video package of all the Raws. Seeing Vince come out and kind of tearing up before he even said anything on the mic was pretty cool, so him showing emotion and all that. And if I'm not mistaken, Vince is what, in his 60s?
Yes, he is mid.
So he's got a good chance. He seems like he takes care of his body. He's got a good chance to still, I mean, I know he'd be really old, but, you know, Raw 2000, God willing, hopefully Vince McMahon can come out in the ring and at least be present. So that'd be pretty crazy. For season round for Raw 2000, but yeah, like I said, God willing, so let's hope that happens. Hey, let's hope there is a Raw 2000. You never know what could happen in another 20 years. And then, like you said, DX, that was really good. I was kind of partial to Billy Gunn the most. I'm not really sure why, but I don't know if it's because he looked like Dolph Ziggler's dad or what, but really partial to Billy Gunn there. And Damian Sandow, that was a good spot for him. They did a good job of having somebody come out and then making fun of somebody and everything. So kudos to him. I'm sure he was happy to get that spot.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a very good way to put it as far as Damian Sandow getting that spot. Vince McMahon will be turning 67 next month. Exactly a month from now, August the 24th, he'll be 67 years old. So, you're looking at,
but there's a chance he could be there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 85. You know, I mean, that's not totally out the water as far as someone, you know, living. You know what I mean? And
his body.
Yeah, exactly. He's still in very good shape. So. You know, I wouldn't totally omit that. I know that Triple H says something about CU in 2000, and he would be around Vince McMahon's age around that time. So it would be a little bit more fitting for him to be there. So it would be great. You know, he'll probably be the top dog, and he'll probably be the one coming out first in the 2000th episode. So. And then we saw Sheamus, Rey Mysterio, and Sin Cara defeat Jericho, Ziggler, and Alberto Del Rio. JR commentates this match, and Ziggler hits Jericho to have Jericho get caught with a bro kick. I didn't get this segment. I didn't get this match. I didn't like this match. Wasn't a big fan of it at all. It seems like they were heading the right direction with the whole Jericho teasing a face turn, feuding with Ziggler. They kind of still did it, but at the same time, I don't see why they would have Jericho and Ziggler team up together. Jericho's been tweeting that he's going to, you know, make a statement on the 1000th Raw. You know, he was one of the biggest faces of Raw throughout the years. And Michael Cole had an interesting stat. He Chris Jericho is actually the second most, the second person with the most matches on Raw behind Triple H, and that's pretty impressive because you know from 99 to 2000 and what was it 2005 when he left the first time. So that's a 6-year span, and then he came back in 07 and stayed until 09, and then he came back in 07, stayed until what was it September of 2010, if I'm not mistaken, and what's that?
Yeah, I said, yeah, I'm not sure, but yeah, definitely two. He had two stints away, so.
Yeah, he had two stints away.
You know.
Yeah, and even with that, he's still second most, you know what I mean? And that's pretty impressive. I'm actually very, very happy. I tell you what was interesting, just a random thought that I thought about. John Cena debuted less than 3 years after Chris Jericho. You know what I mean? It seems like there's a big... Jericho's been around, you know, for a while. Of course, he's been wrestling since 1990, so 22 years. But still, as far as WWE is concerned, you know, Jericho debuted in August of 99 and Cena debuted July of 2002, so...
Yeah, full 3 years, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't even a full 3 years, so it seems like it's a lot more, you know what I mean, but... Less than 3 years, so that's an interesting little tidbit that I just thought about. Yeah, but just I wasn't okay with Jericho taking the fall. I'm just not happy with what they're doing with that. If anything, it would have made more sense for Alberto Del Rio to take the fall if they're really going to do something with Chris Jericho, especially for him to, you know, tweet that he's going to make a statement and just be a part of a 6-man match and don't see him for the rest of the night. I just wasn't happy with that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's a match period. I don't know. I guess they just wanted to get a couple guys some spots in, but the match overall, I mean, I've never been a fan of 6-man tag matches, so I'll rip that match. I mean, I've never been a fan of that style of match. So to me, a 6-man tag match is always poor booking. And you could say, oh, well, we put Triple H, Rock, Undertaker versus, you know, Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, and Bret Hart. You know, you could use the biggest superstars, and I still, to me, it just doesn't always come across. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't come across as blockbuster as it should, so I can definitely rip that match all night. But, yeah, I would have probably had something where the Jericho and Ziggler feud kind of build that a little bit, I don't know, or just had Sheamus come out and do something. But it's funny how the first match on the Raw 1000 had all those SmackDowns or stars in there. So
yeah,
that's a hashtag Raw 1000 Super Show. So,
yeah.
And then you said Jericho's, you know, you said his stat. I also seen floating around there that it was only, Taker was only 20th all time, you know. So, I mean, I know he's been on SmackDown a good amount of the split, but still, I mean, he's been around for almost, what, all of Raw, so.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was on the very first one.
I think his number was 190 matches, so that's pretty crazy. I mean, I know he's had the injury bug and stuff, but wow. That's crazy to think about. You'd think Taker would have him be a little bit higher.
Yeah, especially being there since day one.
Yeah.
We're talking about Jericho, you know, being second, and he debuted in 99. So Taker had Jericho by... in almost 7 years. You're talking about January of 93 compared to August of 99. So that's, you know, that's almost 7 years that he had an advantage. And I believe, what did they say? They said Jericho was around 360, something around there as far as...
Yeah, I want to say it was 360.
Yeah.
It was like an even exact number, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And he can. I think Triple H is only about 15 matches ahead of him. Something,
oh, wow.
Not too much. So he can beat him. Or no, I mean, it would take him. Yeah, yeah. Because I thought I said to myself, like, wow, it would only take him about 15 weeks, you know, a match a week. So he was close enough to where Jericho will probably be number one all time when it's said and done.
Yeah. I definitely see Triple H, you know, continuing that with a good pace. You know, Jericho would be on a better pace than Triple H is because he's still a relatively active wrestler. So, yeah, that's an interesting stat there. If you want to call in, number's 347-884-8452. Let us know your thoughts on the Raw 1000th episode. Chat room is available for you to log in, and like we do every week, if there is a comment that is worth to be said on air live, we will say it and give you credit for it. Now we go into the Brodus Clay defeating Jack Swagger part of the show. Good to see Dude Love. I tell you what, man, just it was kind of sad to me because, you know, Mick Foley has never been known for being in phenomenal shape, but man, he has just—he's just lost it all together. And yeah, I mean, it was an interesting insertion, you know, as far as we're, you know, putting him with the Brodus Clay segment. I just don't understand. I mean, it's July the 23rd is when Raw was, so I think Brodus Clay was about 3 weeks too late with the gear that he had on. The patriotic gear that he had on, but other than that, just poor Jack Swagger. I mean, literally that match was just a few seconds, and it was just awful. I mean, it was really a sad moment, you know, for Jack Swagger, for them to out of all the possible places they could put him, they really made him. I mean, especially out of gaining some type of steam last week with no contest against Ryback, and then just for him to just lose in a matter of seconds to Brodus Clay, it's just a really, really sad moment for Jack Swagger's career right now.
Yeah. And when Brodus Clay did the flop on him, I said, wow, that's it. I mean, that's, you know, I was like, that it was that quick. Like, I didn't even have time to react. So I felt like this was a waste, a really big waste. They could have just, I don't know, they could have did something else right here because there was no point in you gave all that time for entrances and then to have a 23-second match. Ugh. And then Dude Love didn't do it for me. And like you said, Mick did look bad. I told you, man, I would not be a fan of Mick trying to work with anybody now. I don't know, man. Nobody can make Mick look good. He's just those ligaments of his. He's got some bad joints. So I don't know, man. But like I said, this spot was just it was the first waste of the night.
Yeah, I would indeed say that. Yeah. Speaking of waste of the night. Oh, yuck. The next segment was, talk about your epic fails. I don't remember exactly what you queued a few weeks ago as an epic fail. I'm sure that they'll be refreshed within our memories as far as the epic fail. But the
Margo was last a few weeks with the that was the epic.
Yes. That's exactly what it was. And I will say this, and the funny part of it is it's still aligned with a general manager. So, it was just incredibly ridiculous to me. And basically all of this, weeks and weeks and weeks of AJ Daniel Bryan, CM Punk, Kane, you know, all of this. You have months of feuding between the two, Punk and Bryan, and Kane added for a little bit. I mean, all of that for AJ to say, stop, you know, I said yes to another man, proposal, you know, not in that way, and Vince McMahon comes out. I was like, okay, well, all right. Vince McMahon has pretty much played the neutral for a while, and I don't see him being involved, you know, in some big angle. So when he came out, I was just like, okay, it can't be something really big. I'm sure he's not crashing the party. And so when he did the whole, and then what made it even worse is that, like, the way he announced it was building the suspense for, okay, who's the new GM and all that for AJ. Now, don't get me wrong. I've said it weeks in the show. I'm a big AJ fan, but this is probably one of the worst positions that AJ could be in. You know, she's still relatively green on the mic, and, you know, it's going to really take, I mean, this is really too much pressure for AJ. For her to be general manager, I mean, and no matter what, she gets heel heat or face pops. This is just like you just said. This is just too much for her. Too much pressure. This is just going too far. You're thrusting her right into, you know, a position that has a very high level of expectation, and I don't see this being successful at all.
No. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I'm guessing it'll be short-lived because you can't go months and months on with this. With the stock they were putting into her before was okay, but, you know, like we said, too far. I don't know. This might have been the lamest WWE wedding to date, man, because it wasn't anything too crazy.
No.
I mean, because the next segment, like we talk about, wasn't really part of the wedding. So, Slick must have been before my time. I couldn't really remember him. So, and he got on there and he got the preaching the word, and it looked like AJ was really speeding him up for real. He looked like he was getting into it, happy to be out there talking. So it looked like that was legit, you know. So that was funny. I thought last night, though, and I thought this well, a week or two before with the anonymous GM, when one of my friends actually, I brought up that they said that Bret Hart would have been a good person to choose as the anonymous GM and do something with that. And I thought maybe choosing Bret Hart as the GM for now and just now until Survivor Series and somehow having him get his payback at Survivor Series, you know, just, you know, it's Bret Hart. He ain't going to be able to work a full schedule like that forever. So if you did that, if they would have did that, that would have been pretty cool. And, of course, he was in the building, so that was nice. I don't know. Just the AJ thing, though. But, yeah, I mean, my first choice, I guess I would have Bret Hart and then work something in the Survivor Series with him getting doing something or getting some type of retribution payback or something reminiscent of the 97 screw job?
Yeah, Survivor Series 97.
Yeah, so that would have been my thing. That's who I would have chose as GM, and I'll put a little pressure on you off the top of your head. Who would you have chose right now?
I would have chose John Laurinaitis, honestly. I think that he did a good job. I think that him coming back after being gone, somehow they could have finagled, you know, there was some type of breach in his contract or something like that. They could have rehashed that, you know what I mean, and they could have actually had another face, you know, try to dethrone him. The reason why I would say no to Bret Hart is because they it was like a been there, done that with Bret Hart. Yeah, he was GM for a while, and I don't know if you remember when he won the U.S. title from The Miz.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, even when he was GM for a second, you know, it really didn't do much for me even then. So I really didn't.
I think that John Laurinaitis would be better suited making a stable, being the, you know, manager or whatever of that stable. Because, one, we need a good stable around, and I just don't want that GM character with all that power for too long, and just I want to get away from it for at least a year. Like, I've never really been a fan of it, so. Like, I think when they don't have GMs or somebody running shows, they do it. It's a little more better to me. Because I get tired of, I mean, I can go back to Stephanie or Heyman or Flair or McMahon itself or who else, Foley, Michaels. Like, it never really gets to me. Gorilla Monsoon, you know, like, it just, I don't know. I've never been a fan of that character.
And that's the reason why I would say, you know, like, because... I was sharing this with someone earlier. I think the Thousand for All was the night of payoffs. And just about every single payoff was a failure to me. And yeah. we'll go further into the show, which proves that to me. But I mean, which I'll make proof to that claim. But I just think just about every single payoff was it failed to me, and I think this people was expecting a big thing, and this was a horrible payoff
for
you know, bringing the suspense and the anonymous, you know, who's going to be the GM. And I think that if it would have went back to Laurinaitis, that would have been a better payoff than AJ, because that would have given another face, another base, especially when we saw with what happened at the end of the night, that would have gave an opportunity for another face to be in the hunt, because there, as we saw later on that night, they're more than ever, they're in dire, desperate need for a face, you know, in the WWE, especially on Raw. So I think Laurinaitis would have been good. It's not like I would have been like totally okay with Laurinaitis being GM, but it would have been just kind of like you said, you know, you're not a big fan of that spot. I'm not a big fan of it either, but at the same time, I think that Laurinaitis did a good job at it, and that, you know, he would get the heat to push another face up. It really doesn't matter who it is. I mean, if any face goes against, if any face goes against Laurinaitis, you know, they're basically a shoe-in to have more airtime and to get pops. So I think it could have been utilized for that. AJ being general manager was ridiculous. I mean, what is that going to do? Who is she going to help? Who is she going to enhance?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to incorporate all of those factors in
that,
and it was ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it only involves Daniel Bryan. I mean, coming up next, that segues into how it doesn't involve CM Punk anymore.
Yeah, and Bryan stays in the ring, and he gets interrupted by CM Punk, and then eventually The Rock. And then The Rock announced that he would face whoever will be champ at Royal Rumble, and then eventually gives Daniel Bryan a rock bottom. This spot, too, to me, was a little odd. I mean, just they were pushing so many people to be there, and I was just thinking throughout the week, I was just thinking about how, you know, who's going to be in this spot, and, you know, this person's confirmed to return, and where's his spot going to be, and, you know, Rock was confirmed to return, Taker was confirmed to return, and I was wondering where their spots were going to be, and wrote an article on Bleacher Report about them being two of five top choices to actually be a big payoff for Heath Slater's angles that he's been doing, which we'll go into, which was another bombed payoff to me. But at the same time, coming here and making that announcement, I don't know, this really didn't do much for me, and I wasn't that impressed. And honestly, I mean, you're a big Rock fan, so no disrespect, but I don't care to see The Rock in the WWE title hunt. He's the almost the epitome of a part-time wrestler, and him being champ would just make absolutely no sense, because he'll leave. You know what I mean? And just I don't see any. I mean, just whoever he wrestles, he's going to have to put over, and that's going to be hard for The Rock to do, or just to even right. think about The Rock putting somebody over at SummerSlam. I mean, not SummerSlam, but the Royal Rumble, if anywhere. And so, whether it's Punk, whether it's Cena, it's going to be tough to see The Rock put someone over, because I don't see him winning the title.
Yeah, I'm a Rocky fan, but I told you I fully converted to Team Cena during the WrestleMania 28 activities, so you can officially say Team Cena here. And I mean, it just goes back to why I'm a Rock fan or a Cena fan now versus Rock, because like you said, he's part time. The only person I can see him putting over is John Cena. So either Cena will be champ by then and beat Rock at Rumble, or Rock somehow wins the title and headlines the next Mania with Cena and then puts him over. I could see them doing that, since it's only, a 2-month build. They'll somehow, I could see Vince putting his stock in The Rock and letting him be part-time, like every other week or something. And I don't know. I could definitely see that. So somehow this is going to lead to Rock Cena too. We know this.
I think it's inevitable, but I hope not. But I just you're right. Yeah. Rock Cena too.
At all. We know our Mania main event. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I'm just not looking forward to the next 9 months of WWE.
It would have been so much better if Stone Cold could have been in that spot with CM Punk. I'm telling you. The build-up for that would have been 20 times better than Brock and Cena ever was.
Without question. Without question. And there's been a few rumblings over the past couple of years that Austin's in good physical condition. He's in the best physical condition that he's been in for quite some time, and he has one more match left in him, and CM Punk would be that guy. So the build would be good. And just for the record, as everybody saw, he was filming a movie, but no Austin. I mean, it was not only no Austin appearance, it was no Austin via satellite, no Austin exclusive video package, no nothing, and I'm like, wow, out of anybody, Stone Cold Steve Austin was the guy, for Raw for so long. And it was just, for them not to do that was just another epic fail, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you did the little Stone Cold McMahon back and forth and went to commercial. That was it. I mean, and that wasn't, they didn't glorify like they should have,
Yeah, definitely. Onward, we had Bret Hart being a special ring announcer for the Christian defending his Intercontinental title against an unknown opponent, which was revealed to be The Miz. Miz wins his first Intercontinental title. Although I'm not totally opposed to The Miz winning the title, I don't think it was a good idea for him to win it here, because it was no build at all. It was absolutely no build. The Miz has been deep pushed for so long, and he comes back, pulls a promo, loses at the Money in the Bank, loses the tag team match last week, and then wins the Intercontinental title. I mean, to me, that doesn't really do anything to that hurts Christian more than it helps The Miz to me. Because The Miz could have had a few little bit more time to build again, and because he's not even really an upper mid carder right now. He's been jobbing to people for so long, almost the entire year, and I mean Christian really revitalized the Intercontinental title scene. And for them to do that, for him to just lose on a 1,000th Raw episode after doing so much to contribute to the revitalizing Intercontinental title, I don't know. I don't know if there's still some animosity with Vince not really thinking Christian to be a big player. Then I don't know what the problem is, but I hope, in the perfect world. My hope is that Christian will be the face for Raw, because there's not, as we saw later on, there's not, like I said, there's going to be there's dire need for a face for Raw, and I hope that the only reason to do that was to give Christian a main event push. If we see anything else, I'm totally dissatisfied with this decision.
My thing is, though, Miz is on Raw, so what? I thought the IC title was part of SmackDown. I know it's hashtag Super Show, but, I mean, are they going to get rid of the U.S. title? I'm not for sure. And it's, U.S. title hasn't really been defended, so they probably could. But, they had to do this for Miz. This is a good spot for him. But like you said, they should have just had some type of impromptu match for him to even get this title shot, the week before. They could have had something. Or just like you said, just announced it the week before, any type of build-up. So but this is a better spot for Miz. He needed something, and this should work for him. Better than having U.S. title and
It should. It's just that I for the sake of Christian, I don't know where this goes, and I hope that they give him some type of love. So, yeah.
And while I'm thinking about it real quick, wasn't there supposed to be a pre-show?
Yeah, there were supposed to be.
I was on WWE.com, and I don't know. Me and my friend both tried it on both different devices, and we couldn't find the pre-show.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and I mean, every other week or pay-per-view, I've seen the pre-show. It's been right on the home page, and it just, there was no pre-show, and they didn't say anything about it.
Wow. Yeah, that's very interesting. Speaking of no pre-show, there was also no prime-time players at all. Other than a tout from Kofi and a small backstage segment with Roddy Piper for R-Truth, that was it. Just where they placed people at. I mean, it was a 3-hour show. I know that they had a lot of returns, but I was just so dissatisfied with the placement of talent.
Everything wasn't so epic like they made it seem. So they
exactly.
could have I mean, some current people's superstars should have been on. So,
yeah, definitely. Then we saw a Triple H and Paul Heyman in-ring segment. Heyman says that Lesnar declines initially, and then Stephanie McMahon comes out. She talks to Heyman, and she comes out based on Heyman talking to Triple H about wife and kids and things like that, and getting under Triple H's skin. Stephanie comes out. There's been a lot of positive rave about her looking very, very good. As far as she just recently had a child again, I'll give it to her. She looks phenomenal for just recently having a child. So especially being 36 years old. So yeah, she's kudos to Stephanie for getting back in shape that quick. And she was a little she's been thick for a while, even you know, after she had her other kids. And but at the same time, you know, she's gotten a lot thinner now. But she talks to Paul Heyman and gets under his skin, and eventually Heyman, on behalf of Brock Lesnar, changes his mind and accepts the challenge. And then Lesnar comes out and has a scuffle with Triple H. It's interesting because I even see Lesnar looks a lot better now. I will say that.
Yeah.
As opposed to 3 months ago, you can tell that he's been working out hard. But I will say this: I was kind of looking at the potential shoot fight between Lesnar and Triple H, and as big and relatively intimidating that Triple H would be to anybody else. It just really seems like Lesnar would just eat him alive, because I saw like Lesnar pull back a few times when he wanted to just, you know, go hard, you know, as far as, you know, the little shoulder thrust, you know, the turnbuckle, and just kind of throwing him around to the corner and stuff like that. He had to pull back a few times, and it just really seemed like if it was really a shoot fight, Triple H wouldn't stand a chance.
No, yeah, and tell you what, I don't know who had the better haircut there. Brock Lesnar's haircut, I don't know what that was, some sort of mohawk. I don't know, he's always had that high and tight, but it was more tight than high this time.
Yeah.
So, looked a little goofy, but yeah, he's, I don't know, man. You're right. He definitely had to pull back some punches, and the segment was weak, or not weak, so much weak, but just weird with Stephanie and Heyman. The way she jumped on him, that was real weird. There, I'm like, slow down. You're in a dress there, sweetie. Take
yeah.
it easy. That was a little different, and I see. Tripp and Brock go at it, yeah, but I don't know, man. It's still, I'm not all the way there. It hasn't done it for me yet. I know the crowd loved it, but I'm not all the way there yet.
I would concur. I'm not that sold either. And I was trying my best to really get into it yesterday, but it was another failed payoff, honestly.
I'll be shocked to see who wins.
Yeah, yeah.
But if Triple H puts him over.
That
means L's for Brock.
I don't think that Brock would go over. I think that he would put Triple H over. It really, based on all the animosity that we've heard about Brock Lesnar in just a 20 dates period, I don't see him going over anyone. I see him really, I mean, whoever he feuds with at probably either Royal Rumble or WrestleMania will probably be his next big feud. I don't see him. It'll probably be with The Undertaker, if it's at WrestleMania. Right now, there's been some reports that The Undertaker has yet to decide who he wants to fight at WrestleMania. He has a choice between The Rock, Cena, or Lesnar, and whoever he chooses, the other two will feud against each other. So if he chooses Lesnar, Rock and Cena will feud against each other. If he chooses Cena, it'll be Lesnar and Rock. If he chooses Rock, it'll be Cena and Lesnar again. So, yeah. So, it is. It is scary. Yeah, we'll see where that goes. Hopefully, hopefully there's a decent build. I think, honestly, you know, I prefer Rock and Taker. We never saw it at Mania. We never saw Taker and Cena either. I wouldn't be too opposed to that one either. But
oh, I definitely. That's been a dream of mine at a Mania. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully that's
going
to be last.
I would say this, though. I would say that I would rather see Cena. I would rather see Rock. I would rather see Rock and Taker this year because I don't see Rock being involved in 30. He may be, but I think that the whole spectacle of The Rock being back is just kind of, you know, fizzing out, really. He may be involved in 30, but if he is involved in 30, I would be okay with seeing Rock and Taker because that would be kind of like an end of an era thing. But if there's not really any chance that he'll be involved in 30, they can do it now and do Cena and Taker for 30, because to me, Cena and Taker at 30 would be a little bit more marketable than Rock and Taker. Just as far as the current, because Cena will still be around, you know what I mean? So yeah, it'll be a little bit more marketable. So,
like I said, I'd rather be Taker's last Mania because, I mean, right now Cena's the top dog, and I'm sure he will be for another 4 or 5 years. So,
I'm sure. That's too long, but I can see him doing that. I can see him being around for that long, but 4 or 5 years to me, seeing Cena being a top guy is just kind of excruciating to me, honestly.
Yeah.
but if anybody has any War 1000 thoughts, be sure to give us a call, 347-884-8452. Once again, the number is 347-884-8452. We'll be taking calls if applicable. Onward, we will go to Howard Finkel announcing Heath Slater. Here's the big segment that I was looking forward to. We saw weeks of Heath Slater having different legends coming out and competing against him or having interviews with him like Piper did. But I tell you what, he challenges anybody to a no count out, no DQ, and Lita comes out. Out of anybody in the entire WWE world of wrestlers, past or present, Lita comes out. No disrespect to Lita. She's actually probably my favorite all-time WWE diva. I was a big fan of Lita. But Lita. So, I mean, it's and, you know, I thought they were so big on the females not facing the males, you know. And Yeah, and, you know, it was good to see APA, you know, it was good to see JBL and in the APA garb, but I totally was not a fan of this at all. I mean, there was a part of me that was like, okay, well, if there's no disqualification, that means that we can see either one of two people. Now, this one would have been a huge limb, but they were pulling out all the stops. The first choice was Matt Hardy, which I'd have been pseudo-okay with. And then my second choice was, of course, Edge. And neither of them came out. Edge would be more logical because he's still involved, you know, with the WWE. And that's another absence that was very, you know, conspicuous. And I'm wondering, he comes out on some random Raw to talk to Cena, you know, a couple months ago, but he doesn't come out for the 1,000th Raw episode. I mean, that was ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing we could have seen was, I know he retired for his neck, and I respect that, but we could have seen a spear. You know what I mean? And if it was, Lita could have, hit Slater with a trash can or something. You know what I mean? And Edge could have speared him, and Edge could have pinned, Slater. You know what I mean? So it just would have been a few moves, but Lita out of anybody. I just totally, talk about your epic fail of payoffs. Out of all the weeks, all the legends, this was a epic fail of a payoff to me.
It was a fail to me first, kudos to Lita for still looking amazing, because as we've seen, a lot of superstars and divas come back and they don't quite look the same, but she actually may look better than what she did. And like you said, I'm kind of with you there. Her and Trish Stratus are, 1A and 1B as far as favorite divas, and I'm sure anybody would agree with that. But for me, it was a fail because I thought Heath Slater, I know it was the internet rumors, but I thought he would get some sort of payoff, And the biggest thing for me was I thought he was about to win the U.S. title because I thought he was going to take on Santino. I'm like, so Santino and Hornswoggle came out to give out dolls.
Yeah, that's it.
And that was it. Like, where did they even go? Like, they just went backstage, and I'm like, what was the point of that? They had me thinking he was about to take on Santino, and I don't know. They could have did something where, they could have even turned him face and had him win it and celebrate with the legends, or, say he's all right, or even if you kept him heel, just celebrating with the legends, and then the legends do something to him, and I don't know. It was just, you're right, it was another fail of the night, and yeah, it was great to see Lita, but yeah, I don't know what that was about.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw Sean Mooney. It was good to see him back as well. I was glad to see Slick. I followed Slick in the 80s, very, very familiar with Slick. He looked awful, though. I felt bad about that, but unfortunately, he's aged quite a bit over the past 25 years or so, but it was still good to see him. It was good to see Sean Mooney back, too. He was one of the original interviewers for Raw back in the day. He interviewed Daniel Bryan, and that was good to see him. And then we kind of talked about it a little bit. But Kane comes out, gets interrupted by Jinder Mahal, Curt Hawkins, Tyler Rex, Hunico, Camacho, and Drew McIntyre. Jinder Mahal basically saying that those six, doesn't get an opportunity, and they kind of surround the ring, and it was pretty much inevitable to me that this was Taker's spot, and so he came out and he had the hood on, and I was wondering, like, okay, so is, I know that he was bald, and he kind of grew it out a little bit for Mania. And I was wondering what was underneath the hood, but then it was a bona fide mohawk now. Yeah, definitely UFC style mohawk now, and just not the same for me. He doesn't look like he's in good shape anymore, and it was good to see Taker back. I mean, just the nostalgia of Taker, it was good to see him back, but it was just another weird spot for me. Like I was just saying, just another weird, weird spot for me. You got six just random superstars that never got an opportunity, that doesn't get an opportunity, much of an opportunity these days. Surround Kane. Taker helps him. They tombstoned Curt Hawkins and Hunico. and it was just a bunch of dead air, weirdness to that whole thing, and just for that to be Taker's spot just really was puzzling to me. I might get some disagreeing views about this statement, but I honestly would have rather seen Taker be the payoff for Heath Slater than being this odd, you know, just weird, not even a wrestling match, just helping out Kane, you know, spot. It was just really odd to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, he could have been the Heath Slater payoff because he's not exactly scary anymore with that new haircut. I don't know, he needs to maybe just go with a really low shaved head or something. I mean, it's just not working. And it would have been better to me if he would have just did the normal lights go dim, lights come back on, he's in the ring. I think the entrance thing, that took a lot out of everybody. You know, it took him forever to get to the ring, and, you know, the rest of the superstars are just sitting there waiting. So, I don't know. And then he just, the trouble with the hoodie there. So, he didn't do, he was trying to time it up, you know, take off the hood with one of the gongs at the same time. And, yeah, then I read something where they said he was having trouble getting it off his hand. So,
took about two hours.
That whole segment, they could have did a little better.
Yeah. And then lastly, we see John Cena cashing the Money in the Bank, as he said last week, goes against CM Punk. Good match. You know, they've got some good chemistry with each other. John Cena breaks the streak of successful title win cash-ins. He doesn't break the streak of wins, because he actually won the match via disqualification, but he didn't win for the title. He didn't cash it in successfully for the title. So, you know, I can go on and on about, I'm a rational guy. So if there's any advantage to that, it breaks the automatic cash in mentality. You know, that's the only thing that I can see from that would benefit that. Other than that, just awful. I'm not going to go too much into it, because I can rant for the rest of the show about how I think it was just awful, because Cena could have definitely, like I said, cut a promo and been involved in this whole thing, because at the end of the day, as we saw at the end of the show, it wasn't even about Cena. So, I mean, he didn't even have to win the Money in the Bank match for the conclusion of the night, you know, because what happened was show interferes, beats up on Cena, Punk doesn't do anything, Rock comes out to save Cena, and all of a sudden Punk stops the people's elbow. He wasn't as good as a Shawn Michaels super kick in the middle of the Rock's people's elbow, but he stopped. He just did a regular clothesline, and Rock like sold the mess out of that.
It was
really awkward, but it was just a running clothesline. So it kind of weirded me out a little bit. And then eventually he gets the Rock in the people's elbow and puts him in a GTS and officially claims his stake as a heel again after being a face for a year. And I'm sorry for the listeners who are a fan of this segment, but it didn't do anything for me. I wasn't wooed by it. I'm not too opposed to Punk turning heel, because he'll be successful at it. He's a successful heel. But at the same time, what in the world? What does this do? How does this incorporate future booking for the rest of the year, because there's a really good chance that we won't see The Rock until the Royal Rumble. So you've got 5 more months of booking for the rest of the year. You've got The Big Show, who's a relative, who's a bona fide heel, and then we have Cena, who's a face, but he gets mixed reactions. CM Punk, out of all of this, the equation was the bona fide face. Now he's a heel, and now what? If he keeps the title, if he beats Cena, who does he fight in September, October, November, December? You know, who is that guy? Who is that face that will step up? There's not many selections as far as the face that will step up and be that guy that will feud against CM Punk. And with The Rock saying that he's going to face whoever's champ, there's a good, I mean, it has to be someone who's marketable against The Rock. And there's a really good chance, unless it's John Cena, that it's going to be a heel. So there's a good chance that CM Punk's going to keep the title unless he loses it and regains it. And even then, it's still kind of mysterious to me how they're going to let that happen. Just this whole heel turn right now in the middle, you know, relatively the middle of the year, it was just really awkward to me, and it really leaves suspicion of, you know, what's next as far as the baby face of Raw. It didn't woo me. It didn't do much to me. I just looked at it with disgust, and I just wasn't impressed with it.
Yeah, it screws up everything for, for later in the year. Kind of puts them in a hole, you know, in a bind or whatever. This, though, to me, wasn't, I don't know. Well, one, it was at the, all this has happened at the expense of the Money in the Bank. Two, it's still kind of lame that Big Show interfered. I think he needs to move on to something else anyway. And then it's still like the Money in the Bank winner still didn't get pinned and lose. You know, like, it's okay, yeah, Cena's the first, but this didn't even matter. It's like it doesn't even count. I mean, it'll be in the Money in the Bank history books, so to speak, but to me, it's like it still doesn't count. It's like it still never happened, you know? So,
yeah.
It just, I don't know. And like I said, show needs to move on, puts them in a bind. What are they going to do? Where do they go? And it just wasn't a legit heel turn to me. Like, CM Punk could still be face and beat up The Rock, you know? Like, it wasn't like they were friends. He had already stated that, you know, he was going to beat him, and he was, you know, best in the world. He didn't never claim to like John Cena, you know? So they could have did more. They could have waited and did something else. I don't know. I thought this match would have been better, and I thought it would have got more time, too.
Yeah, exactly. We're actually going to take a call here. State your name, where you're, the city you're from, and let us know your Raw thoughts.
Yeah, I'm from Reynoldsburg. My name is Toots.
Hello, Toots. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
The thing about Brock Lesnar is I have no faith in him. I think it's an absolute disgrace that he's fighting Triple H. Triple H deserves a much better. Brock Lesnar failed in the SL. He failed at WWE for the first time. He's going to fail at WWE again. There's no hype behind him. He's not a believable character. I mean, they have a lot of hype behind him. Don't get me wrong. But he's not he's not superstar quality that I expect from the WWE. He's a farce. I never thought much of him at all. And I think Triple H is a much better performer than he is. So give me your thoughts. Let me know. See you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call.
Wow. Can I say something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I totally agree with Toots here. Like, I wanted to say that Brock doesn't fit in this WWE in the first place. Like, he hit the nail on the head there. I mean, it's, and yeah, definitely Triple H is a way better performer, of course. But, I mean, he's right. He does not fit in this WWE. It just doesn't, it's not a believable character, and I kind of feel like that with The Rock now, too. And that's,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he hit the nail on the head. So kudos to the dudes out there.
Yes, absolutely. I would concur. I've stressed this before on previous shows. These part-timers, with the exception of Jericho, which isn't really a part-timer per se in that sense anymore, not cutting it. The Rock is just... I mean, like I said, his whole buzz is fizzing out. Brock Lesnar, I've stressed this countless amount of times. His contract is from Mania to Mania, well, post-Mania, the day after Mania until Mania. And I don't see him renewing because this just isn't the... This isn't the right time for him. It was good to see that type of nostalgia back when he first came out with all the rumblings and the rumors of him returning. But the 20 dates, that killed it. Just the match with Cena was very shocking, but, you know, it was still kind of odd to me.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
and
like then, that one match.
Yeah, and then even with that, just the build with Triple H. You've even said this in a previous show. The build with Triple H has been so lackluster.
Yeah.
Maybe because of the dates and because of a very limited Brock Lesnar appearances. That I haven't, you know, both of us have admitted that we're just not sold on Brock Lesnar in this feud, period. And unfortunately, like, just Brock Lesnar and the WWE of right now, I mean, he's not doing anything to keep my attention, you know, to him.
Yeah.
Even coming back after, you know, 3 months. Yesterday, and it did nothing to me, you know. So
we go by, and I forget about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm actually happier to see Heyman than Lesnar. I mean, it's like I'm a Heyman fan. It's good to see Heyman. He's amazing on the mic, you know, with all the controversy with him and Vince and ECW and the other, and the WWE's version of ECW and him leaving because of not agreeing with the direction of that. And, you know, it seems like even with that, it's good to see him, you know, be involved as much as he is. And, Brock, you know, like you said, kudos to Toots because I'm just not sold on Brock Lesnar. That's why, honestly, I would actually be perfectly fine if he puts over everybody that he's involved with. As much as, you know, as much as I don't think Triple H needs another win for his career to be any more relevant than what he already is, yeah, I definitely think that Brock Lesnar should put Triple H over, and I think that if he feuds with Taker, he should, of course, he's going to put Taker over. And if he feuds with anybody in between there, I don't care who it is, put him over. I don't care, because Brock Lesnar is just not that important to me. So, good question, good comment. Thanks for the call. So, we'll shortly go right to SmackDown. And real quick, there's a bunch of non-appearances that we mentioned that I don't understand why, as far as the 1,000th Raw episode, and I wonder if that was actually considered, you know, with all the spots that they had, that, you know, no via satellite Austin, no Booker T, no Edge, you know. But instead, we do see Hornswoggle, you know, and I tell you,
dolls.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was one of the moments that we see at the live events, you know, just to hold us over during commercials. You know, it seemed like they cut on air a little bit too early or something, you know. So it was just really, really awkward to me, and just totally not a fan of it. Real quick, we'll go here to SmackDown. Rey Mysterio in-ring promo interrupted by Alberto Del Rio, then Dolph Ziggler, then Sheamus. Primetime players and Junico and Camacho defeats Kofi, R-Truth, and Epico and Primo. Big Show does a post-match beatdown on everyone except the primetime players. Damian Sandow defeats Zack Ryder. AJ and Daniel Bryan on the Peep Show, and AJ eventually slaps Christian. Kane and Daniel Bryan, he beats Daniel Bryan by disqualification due to an interference by AJ. Road Warrior Animal, odd spot. Seemed like they slid him in there. This Legends thing was on for Raw because of the Raw 1000, but they did a Legends thing on SmackDown, which it was just really weird to me that they chose to do this on SmackDown. But he beats Heath Slater. And then the main event was Sheamus and Mysterio defeating Alberto Del Rio and Ziggler by disqualification. Post-match attack by Alberto Del Rio and Sheamus, and another failed cash-in by Ziggler. I will say this: I'm okay with their what they're doing with Ziggler, the whole teasing, the failed cash-ins, and things like that. As long as he doesn't lose, I'm fine with them just kind of making a tease for him cashing in often. So I hope that they continue to do that.
Oh, I got a feeling they might blow it, man. I don't know. The failed attempts, man. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But I got a feeling after the way Cena cashed his in and the way that went, Dolph might be the legitimate first. I hope not, but and I guess I'm only saying this because I'm such a Dolph Ziggler fan, and the way he gets treated, I just prepare for the worst, you know. So I know you can relate too. So it's just I don't know. I'm really scared that he might be the legitimate first one.
Yeah. I sure hope not, man. He deserves it, and this definitely would be good for him. So real quick, we'll go to Impact Wrestling. Bound for Glory series open fight night. James Storm in-ring promo calls out Angle. Jumped by Aces and Eights backstage, Angle is. Samoa Joe defeats the Pope. Most of the matches were Bound for Glory series matches. Robbie defeats Jeff Hardy by countout. Good Check Challenge contestant this month is Sam Shaw. Doesn't really get a chance to do that. Prove himself because he's attacked by Aces and Eights. They said that he'll have an opportunity to do it this coming Impact episode. And Mr. Anderson defeats AJ Styles. Good match. Claire Lynch comes out and talks about that night and shows pictures. Really still don't understand why they're continuing to just overindulge us with this AJ and Claire angle. I'm just not a fan of it. Daniels defeats RVD. As many people know, I'm a Christopher Daniels fan, so I was happy about this. Austin Aries backstage interview. Joseph Park and Garrett Bischoff backstage segment. Bully Ray defeats Magnus, and then the Austin Aries and Bobby Roode leads to a no contest due to both being attacked by Aces and Eights. Now, I'll tell you what. I really, really hope that this is a good payoff with the Aces and Eights. I don't want to... I guess that I'm giving people a spoiler alert. I don't know if they'll unveil all of them, but one of the wrestlers that has been a part of the Aces and Eights has been Luke Gallows. So good to see him have some type of spot. I don't know if he'll stay with them and be unveiled to be part of the stable throughout when they do unveil themselves, which hopefully I really hope that this pays off to them unveiling themselves, because I believe it started off with about three or four, and now it's up to about six or so. I really hope it has a good payoff, and kind of threw me off when they attacked Bobby Roode. I see why they did attack Bobby Roode, because they don't want to make it seem like they're being partial. They're kind of taking over the whole company. But Bobby Roode is the epitome of heels right now. And if the Aces and Eights want to have as much heel heat as possible, I don't think attacking Bobby Roode would be is a good idea. I think Bobby Roode should have really kind of slithered out of the ring, typical heel, and they, could have beat up on Austin Aries and celebrated. So wasn't a big fan of that part, but I am intrigued to see where this Aces and Eights thing will end up.
Yeah, I did like the fact that they came out during the, the gut check?
Yeah, gut check challenge. Yeah.
Competition or whatever that was. That one caught me off guard. I'm with you. Like I said, it's a big payout. Just reminds me of a little Nexus inspired. Reminds me of when they were coming out doing their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if this will top the Nexus. Well, I'm sure it won't top the Nexus. But at the same time, I think that it has some type of – it has an opportunity to be worthwhile as far as TNA is concerned. So we haven't seen Jeff Jarrett in a while. Maybe Jarrett has something to do with it. I can see Jeff Jarrett being involved in this, because Sting is the first inductee to the TNA Hall of Fame, and I can see Jeff Jarrett saying, "I'm the founder, I should be the first inductee." So, he comes back and he's the mastermind of this whole Aces and Eights thing. And, there's his spot. And maybe it leads to a Sting and Jeff Jarrett match at Bound for Glory, which I wouldn't be opposed to. So I can see that paying off. If they want to take the spotlight off of the Aces and Eights as far as unveiling who that is, they could easily kind of defer the attention to Jeff Jarrett saying, "I'm the mastermind behind that." They can be relative unknowns as long as Jeff Jarrett, gets on the mic and pulls a promo saying, "I hired a bunch of thugs, to do my dirty work and help take over TNA." It can be okay like that. I'd be fine if that happened. So interested to find out to see what this Aces and Eights thing is doing, and we'll see. Good to see Chavo Guerrero sign with TNA. He's been working for the TNA TNA founded Ring Ka King in India, founded by Jarrett as well. Kind of like a umbrella promotion of TNA in India. He's been doing a lot of work there, so it'll be good to see him. I would be okay with him being the face of TNA. So I definitely would be happy if they made him a bona fide face and really make him the face of TNA. So we'll see how that goes. On to Ring of Honor. Really quick, there was just three matches. Eddie Edwards and Adam Cole defeats Mike Bennett and Bob Evans. Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team defeats Fusion DS. Kevin Steen defeats Mike Mondo. Now, for those who don't know who Mike Mondo is, I've said this in a previous show. He used to be a part of the Spirit Squad. Usually, he's been involved in a little bit more matches against heels. So we'll see where that goes. But just really a quick question to you as far as Ring of Honor is concerned. Who would be your choice to defeat Kevin Steen for the Ring of Honor Heavyweight Championship?
Oh, man. I guess Wow, that's a great question. Because I would have him be champ for a couple, another, probably say at least 2 months. But, maybe work Jay Lethal up if he gets on the... I guess that'd be my first choice. And that'd be good for him being world heavyweight, world champion. But, and that's just my ignorance to ROH. I haven't been watching it long enough, but maybe 6 or 7 months that I don't know the roster like that. And in the way they air their episodes, it's hard to know their roster like that.
Yeah.
But, don't get me wrong. I would go with somebody different. I wouldn't do Davey Richards, but I do respect him and I think he's amazing. But I guess I would do, off the top of my head, I would probably do Jay Lethal.
I would, being familiar with the roster, I would actually concur with that. I would, Eddie Edwards would be a top choice for me as well. But he's had the title before. Jay Lethal has never had the title. So, like you said, somebody different. It looks like there's some dissension within the Truth Martini's tandem of Roderick Strong and Michael Elgin. Looks like Michael Elgin may be leaning more towards becoming a face. And I've stressed, in previous episodes, I'm a big fan of Michael Elgin, and I actually would be okay with Elgin beating Steen. That would be a pretty interesting match, because Michael Elgin has he usually does a spin-out powerbomb as his finisher, and so that would be interesting to see if he can put Kevin Steen in a spinning powerbomb. So that would be interesting to see. But if I had to choose one person, I concur. I would choose Jay Lethal. So we'll see how long Steen has, and this feud with Davey Richards is getting a bit stale to me. Looks like they're kind of incorporating Eddie Edwards, possibly, but we'll see. We'll see where this goes. Lastly, we're going to do the Flavor of the Week. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Definitely had a lot to cover with the 1,000th Raw, and for the remainder of indefinite weeks, we will be analyzing 3 hours of Raw. So really see how far that goes, because there's been a lot of doubt within the back as far as a lot of WWE employees doubting that they won't have a successful run and may cut off at the
weird.
End of the year.
That's weird, because I've thought that they should have went 3 hours years ago. So I don't know. I mean, from a fan point, that's normal, but yeah, that's why fans don't usually get what they want. But I've thought that for years, that they should have went 3 hours.
Yeah, I think that the roster's too thin, and they don't have enough writing to really captivate me for 3 hours. It seemed like it'll be mostly social media, which can be spared. Honestly, the whole tout thing to me is just ridiculous. So, real quick, just a little just a little snippet of just a little quick flavor of the week this week. New that will be covered with mostly recapping and analyzing the 1000th Raw. So just a real quick flavor of the week. Recycled themes. I got seven of them. One being Real American, as we know, that was Hulk Hogan's theme, originally used by the U.S. Express, which was Barry Windham and Mike Rotunda. The You Suck by Kurt Angle was originally used by the Patriot, Del Wilkes, during his tenure in the WWE. A lot of people knew that he feuded with Bret Hart during Bret Hart's anti-America heel run. This Fire Burns, CM Punk's music, was originally used by Randy Orton. A lot of people don't know that, but Randy Orton came out to This Fire Burns for a while, which is pretty interesting. Mae Young's music was used here and there by Gene Okerlund. You're Not Enough for Me, Layla and Michelle McCool's music was originally used by Tori Wilson during her heel run. Ezekiel Jackson's music was the, if you take away the instruments, is the exact melody, is the exact sequence of everything to the Brawl for All back in the day.
Oh.
And of course, Somebody Call My Mama was by Brothers Clay. It was originally used by Ernest the Cat Miller. Came out in the Royal Rumble and did a little. Yeah.
Yeah. Off guard with that one.
Yeah. And then one last one, actually. I guess I have eight total. Then lastly, Linda McMahon, as many people know, she uses the old WrestleMania theme. So, yeah, just a little.
I guess Texas is from the No Chance in Hell pay per view.
Yeah, the pay per view, the In Your House pay per view. Yeah, and that's another one, which is pretty interesting. So, yep. Thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in. 347-884-8452 is the number. We'll talk about the 1001st episode and see where all the CM Punk and everything else it pans out to be. And AJ being GM, we'll see where that goes. And feel free to give us a call next week, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Pancakes and Power Slams. We will be here for you. Keep in contact with us. Any comments, questions, flavor of the week ideas, send them to cravewrestling@gmail.com. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/cravewrestling. We definitely love your support, so if you want to give financially, the PayPal is cravewrestling@gmail.com. And follow me on the Bleacher Report. I'm a feature columnist, Chris Featherstone. I write articles to please your viewing. And feel free to comment. Feel free to comment the way that you want. And as long as there's civil comments, I'm totally fine with it. And thanks so much. We are here to support you, and thank you for your support with us. And we will just keep going. And thank you so much. And we will be here next week. Pancakes and Power Slams. Have a great week. Goodbye.